This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, December 23rd, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. Take a bow, everyone. 2022 may have been the worst year for corporate handouts in American history. That from John Mozina, president of the Center for Economic Accountability. He says big pandemic spending and a few other factors have led state governments to deal with a flood of cash to government coffers by giving it away to corporate friends in the form of beautifully wrapped piles of subsidies. We spoke in October.
The federal government, you may have heard, spent a huge amount of money in 2020 and a huge amount of money in 2021, well above trend. Does that have anything to do with explaining corporate subsidies and why they're so high?
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard it straight from state legislators who've basically said, you know, in the past, we were able to sort of make claims of poverty. We were able to say, well, we just don't have the money to do this. We can't afford this. They're like, we can't afford this argument anymore, or at least not right now, because there's just too much money sloshing around in the budget and we're just looking for places to spend it. So the floodgates have opened. And then you tack on to that the fact that there's a whole lot of people up for reelection. We've known for some time that these deals spike before elections, that states where governors are running for reelection are twice as likely to see a large 20% or more jump in subsidy spending than those where they're not. And add on to that the sort of weird fillip of the fact that it's a first post-census redistricting. So there's a lot of legislators at the state level who are all of a sudden dealing with entirely or largely or really somewhat new sets of constituents they didn't had before. And they have to come up with ways of all of a sudden making these people like them very quickly. And the easiest way to do that is to buy themselves a spot at a groundbreaking or ribbon-cutting ceremony with the taxpayers' own money.
So it's the state level, where have we seen some of the biggest, most egregious, least defensible corporate subsidies?
Well, unfortunately, this is not a multi-hour podcast, so I can't go into all of the egregious examples. I will say that, and I use the word in its literal sense, there's been an exponential growth this year in subsidy deals of $1 billion or more. The previous record was three, and this is all adjusted for inflation. Previous record was three set in 2010, tied last year. This year we have nine and counting, and there's potential for even more. The only state with two multi-billion dollar deals, so I guess if you have to say one, is unfortunately the state we are sitting in now of Georgia, which announced a $1.8 billion or so to Hyundai for an electric vehicle plant, as well as 1.5 for a different electric vehicle manufacturer, Rivian. So they are apparently funding all sides in the EV market. Ohio has the largest so far this year with the $2.1 billion or so to Intel. And all these numbers, I always have to say or so or roughly, because the numbers in this world are both so big as well as so fuzzy that it's really hard to actually pin them down, because some of it's state, some of it's local, some of it gets into guaranteed lower electric rates. It's very difficult to be really precise on that. West Virginia to Nucor, the steelmaker, North Carolina, which has now set its largest economic deal in history record 3 years running with three different deals. The first one, however, has since fallen apart. Georgia, Kansas, Michigan, Maryland, New York. It is bipartisan. It is in red states. It is in blue states. It is in urban states, rural states. The only consistency is really that overwhelmingly these tend to be states where governors are running for reelection in something of a contested campaign.
Governors like ribbon cuttings. They like job announcements. What evidence is there, and we've talked about this numerous times, but what evidence is there that any of these subsidies pay off?
Little to none. If there's anything that economists, a famously fractious bunch, agree on, is that this stuff just doesn't work. I know the term consensus gets thrown around a lot, but there really truly is a consensus among academics, not just in think tank land, but at just, you know, universities around the country, some of the biggest name universities there are, that just this stuff doesn't work. That you know, at least three out of four times, subsidies don't change what companies were going to do anyways. And that means that, you know, in a famous piece in the Journal of the American Planning Association, professors from the University of Iowa estimated that 90% of the money of the stuff is just flat wasted. And a good example of like of seeing that in practice is what last year we released the award of the worst economic development deal of the year, and it was North Carolina's subsidy of Apple, who were putting a largely AI-focused R&D center somewhere. And they said, oh, we are competing, North Carolina said, well, we have to do a huge subsidy because we're competing with Ohio. And maybe my Michigan native is showing here, but I'm unaware of like roving bands of unemployed AI researchers in Ohio. All of the different industry analyses or whatever is that all of these people are in different places. They aren't, those places are not Ohio. They are, however, in the research triangle, which is where North Carolina subsidized this. So all the people that they were going to hire were there. That's what's happening now is companies are going to where the workers are, not the other way around. And also, you just have to look at the dollars. Apple Computer last year had revenues of more than $1 billion a day. North Carolina's massive $834 million subsidy is a lot of money, but it's less than a day's worth of revenues for Apple spread out over the next 30 years. That's just not going to Tim Cook or whomever makes the final decision on this stuff is not making that decision of where do we put this big research facility that's going to, you know, be super important for our company moving forward based on a day's worth of revenue spread out over three decades. Now, there's someone within the company who got a gold star on their performance report for negotiating that subsidy. But did it actually change where that company was located? No, of course it didn't. There's no way. And that happens over and over and over again. And that's the reality of this stuff is that they don't exist to create jobs. They exist to make voters believe that politicians are responsible for creating jobs, which is why we see them not when the economy is good or bad, but where we are in the electoral calendar.
Where we are in the electoral calendar, what time of year, or what time of, you know, an election cycle do we see these announcements? And can you predict, is there a season for someone like you, John, to look into, to say, well, I got to be looking at those papers because there's going to be a big job announcement in every state in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think it's worth, it's far enough in advance that the that you have time to do the ceremonies and that people have sort of time to factor that into their voting choices, but not so close that you risk it getting stepped on. A good example is there's a consultants group called Site Selection Group. They're actually involved in part of their business involves actually negotiating these subsidies for their clients. And they have they make an effort to track how many subsidy deals and how much those deals are for based on public announcements. And in terms of time of year, they found that 2021 as a whole was up in total deal, aggregate deal cost, almost 100%, 94.8% over the previous year. They then found that the first quarter of this year was up 833% in total deal cost over the first quarter of last year. The second quarter was only up, thankfully, 132% over the second quarter of last year. So at least from the statistics that we can see here, it certainly implies that the, you know, January, February, March of a big, important, sort of scary, because there's a lot of cranky voters out there election year, seems to kind of be the sweet spot for governors to be announcing these things.
What about expectations going forward? Because if companies are getting $1 billion or many hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies to do something they quite likely would have done anyway, what does that do in terms of like voters' expectations becoming sort of anesthetized against these very large chunks of money just flowing directly to private entities from the state?
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, it's dangerous enough that we're having a really bad, historically bad year. The real danger is that everything in history implies that they're going to try to make this the new normal. that everything only ever ratchets up. It doesn't ratchet down. If Intel's getting 2.1 billion Ohio, the next chip maker, funded by in part by the Federal CHIPS Act, which has got a whole bunch of chip makers looking for places to put factories, is going to say, well, we want 2.5 million, or we're going to, you know, the state west nowhere next door or whatever, that this is going to constantly just ratchet up further and further and further. And so when we went from, you know, the best estimate is that the total aggregate price tag of this stuff before COVID was about $100 billion a year, all state and local deals and any form and TIF districts and all the economic stuff all combined together. And that was bad enough. That was enough. The example I use is that's enough money to fund the, at the time, the 11 smallest state budgets combined. So that's still real money. And then, as I said, 2021, in terms of deal volume, was up 95% over 2020. And now we're at the 830 a quarter, you know, 137 a quarter level that we're going to be looking at, you know, in a couple of years, possibly a doubling or tripling or more of the cost that this stuff imposes on state and local budgets. And it's already a level where, you know, for instance, New York City reported before COVID more in corporate tax abatements than it spent that year to run the New York Fire Department and Department of Corrections combined. States run, you know, the cost of like multiple state agencies, you know, cities, my hometown of Detroit, buying one piece of land for an auto plant expansion cost more that year than they spent to run the entire Detroit Health Department. Like, these are real budget decisions that are being forced by these things. And we're going to just be talking about even more state agencies we could have paid for, even more government things, even more burdens on other taxpayers that are now going to need to be imposed to pay for these things because, you know, a few politically connected companies got a special deal.
So, you've detailed this. Many other guests on the Cato Daily podcast have detailed this. That is, these are sexy in a way. That is, politicians can enhance their incumbency prospects by making these announcements. Lawmakers are often more than happy and get wined and dined to sign off on these kinds of deals. And part of your job is to make those deals look less sexy, to call attention to the waste and the fact that these things aren't actually delivering any of the benefits that are promised. But what the flip side of that seems like, trying to make more sexy, low, steady tax rates, infrastructure, government bodies that will work with companies that have made the decision to locate in a particular place, sewage, water, the rates, the cost of electricity, that sort of thing, the labor force, the housing for your future workforce when you make the move, making that kind of stuff more sexy actually seems like a bigger challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to do as one often does on the Cato podcast and quote Saul Alinsky, you know, the price of a successful attack is a viable alternative. You know, if not subsidies, then what? I hear that all the time from state legislators and staffers and city council members and all those sorts of folks. And that's the problem, is that the answer is largely the sort of non-sexy blocking and tackling good government. I mean, we know what companies are actually looking for in their site selection decisions, because the site selection industry has done a whole bunch of its own research on that. Area Development Magazine, which is one of the sort of two main publications for the site selection economic development industry, has been surveying corporate site selectors for 36 years on an annual basis of what factors go into their decisions. I mean, this is not, you know, hard stuff to figure out. It's largely workforce availability and cost. Like, you know, it used to be that you built factory, people came from around the country to work there. Now you take your business and you locate it wherever the workers that you're going to need are. It's the old model of sort of economic migration has been flipped on its head, where it used to be workers who migrate, now it's businesses that migrate. You know, in general, one of the things I say to lawmakers and others is, to try to simplify it, is the more easy and painless and cheap you can make it to build something in your community, the more people are going to want to build things there. Like, the less you can get in people's way, the more you can have, you know, we know from that research that I was talking about that broad corporate tax rate matters more than tax incentives, tax abatements. We know energy cost has increased in saliency of site selectors just in the past few years. Environmental regulations went from sort of 16th or thereabouts a couple, just like 5 years ago, to top 10 today. Labor, sort of like the sort of institutional political power of labor, including whether it is a right to work state, has been, you know, a key issue. Transportation quality. Transportation cost has become a much bigger issue recently with the sort of companies' renewed focus on their supply chains. And that's something that has become an issue there. And then access to things like raw materials and customers and all sorts of, I mean, there's dozens of factors. We know what they are. And when I've spoken to legislators, I've sort of put the list up on the wall or in front of them and said, you know, here are the things that you have levers within your role to impact. Like, there's some of this stuff you can't do much about, or if you try to do it, it's like a workforce quality. You're not going to change that in anything less than multiple years at best, probably more like decades. But you can impact energy costs. You can impact, you know, cost of transporting goods and services. That's gas taxes involved in that, whether you have toll roads and the like. The reality is that that's hard. It's not sexy. It's nowhere near as like obviously politically valuable. And like all of, you know, the good folks are trying to do the right thing, but they're also, frankly, they're often hamstrung by the fact that by and large, voters think this stuff works. State Policy Network earlier this year did polling that found that 57% of voters agree with the concept that subsidies from state and local governments are valuable because they create jobs and bring prosperity to the community. As long as you've got that sort of generic belief that the economic development agencies and their allies are out there promoting every day, there's going to be that direct political incentive for politicians to capitalize that, and they will have to fight an uphill battle. They're like, I hate this stuff, but how do I make the argument to my constituents that we shouldn't be doing this? They think it creates jobs. Like, I don't have time or effort to, like, you know, start reading academic research at them. What do we do? And frankly, the answer usually is it's like, well, it's too expensive. We could be buying a lot of stuff you care about more with this money. And so far, that seems to be the argument that works best. Just making the, hey, we could be paying for, you know, we could put air conditioning in Rikers Island if we just like decrease the amount of corporate subsidies just a little bit, or we could have, you know, funded the Detroit Health Department in the year before COVID a bit better if we hadn't, you know, bought that one piece of land for that automaker. That sort of thing seems to be the kind of argument that actually does work. Now, it's city by city, state by state, discussion by discussion, but that's where it has to go.
John Mozina is president of the Center for Economic Accountability. We spoke earlier this year. It's that time of year when I ask you, yes, you, to show your support for this podcast and the broad mission of the Cato Institute with a gift. You could visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started. And thank you.